We made this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Red and Buried podcast. I'm Frankie.
And I'm Sarah.
And it's just the two of us this week.
God, it hasn't been like that for a while, has it?
No, it's been a while. Do you know, it's because, Sarah, unfortunately, we're too popular now.
Yes, that is an issue.
Yeah, victims of our own success. We have so many authors just clamouring to get on the podcast that it's not just about us anymore.
No, but, you know, we're good to the little people. You probably shouldn't include that.
Too late, that's in. And I completely disagree with that, so I'll keep that in as well so that I look better by comparison.
Oh, I mean, fair.
But it's good to be back and do just a regular old review episode. Although I have to say, I've been really enjoying doing all the interviews and meeting so many wonderful authors.
Yeah, definitely. Thank God we haven't had anyone who's been awful.
Do you know, this is really interesting. Someone asked me recently, like, oh, who's been the worst you've interviewed? And I genuinely I genuinely couldn't answer the question because I was like, they've all been really good in different ways.
That's an awful question. Do they really think that you'd answer it?
Yeah, I think people tend to be awful, so I wasn't entirely surprised. But they did also ask me who the best one was. And again, I couldn't pick one because they've all been so fun in different ways. Yeah. Been very lucky. I think authors tend to be pretty good people.
I would agree.
Well, some exclusions, obviously. I'm not saying any names.
I kind of thought that might be where this was heading, yep.
When I said it wasn't, but then I realised that I should.
Swift turn. Okay. Well, anyway.
Anyway.
What is this week's theme, Frankie?
This week's theme, Sarah, this month's theme or whatever time scale we operate on these days, was a crime thriller book with a female protagonist.
Yeah.
How did you find selecting your book?
I had loads of options, actually. And I narrowed it down to three that I had sitting on my TBR. And then I just picked one because how to describe it, it's kind of revolves around a lifestyle that is quite alien to me. So I thought that was quite interesting.
I was about to make a really mean joke, but I just...
Go ahead.
I was like, oh, what, one with like basic hygiene? It's not even true. Sarah's very clean and smells very nice. It was low-hanging fruit. Sorry.
Thank you. I hope I'm clean.
Like, I'm not with you right now, so it doesn't really matter to me.
No, in general. So, shall I tell you which one I picked?
Yeah, go on then.
That's what you're on the roll. I read Black Widows by Kate Quinn.
Ooh, I've not read this.
It was spoiler alert, it was very good. It was a book that I got in my monthly book subscription a while ago.
Cool.
So it's been sitting there and I've been kind of waiting to read it. So I will read the blurb on the back.
Yes.
Blake Nelson had three perfect wives until one of them killed him. Rachel, Emily and Tina have nothing in common except that they share a husband and a homestead. When their beloved Blake is found dead under the desert sun, the questions pile up. But none of the widows know who would want to kill a good man like their husband. At least that's what they'll tell the police.
My money's on Tina. You don't have to answer that, but I just don't like the sound of her.
Interesting.
Are they Mormons?
Yes. Well, not Mormons. Mormons don't practice polygamy. It's the Church of Latter-day Saints, I believe, who is sort of a subset of Mormonism.
I apologise. I didn't mean to offend anybody with my ignorance.
Well, I mean, I've possibly got that totally wrong. I actually read this a couple of weeks ago now, and I have to say my mind is a little bit shot, and I'm not sure why. So
I'm busy at the moment.
Yeah, but that's obviously kind of why I picked it, because I really don't know very much about polygamy. I've watched some trashy American reality TV shows on the topic. And did you ever watch Big Love, that TV show back in, must be the 90s, I reckon?
Oh, I don't think I did.
Oh, it was so good. Well,
have seen a lot of trashy documentaries about it, and I think Louis Theroux did an episode on it, which was great.
I think you're right.
Fun.
Yeah, but I have to say it's kind of, it's a lifestyle that, I've just looked up Big Love. It was actually 2006, which is way more recent than I was expecting. It's got Bill Paxton.
Okay.
And actually a very, very good cast, so I recommend it. Anyway, yeah, it's a lifestyle that I can't really empathize with. Really doesn't interest me at all, but
sounds like a lot of work, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's quite problematic as well, let's face it. I'm not going to get into the politics of it. Because
no, to each their own, no judgment on that front.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I think polygamy for polygamy's sake is probably quite healthy. And if that's what one wants, fantastic. It's religious polygamy where there's very much a power imbalance. And actually you see that in this book, obviously.
Okay.
And the woman / women trying to reclaim their power, I guess.
Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. Okay, so tell me more.
Well, I don't want to say too much about it and give it away, but the wives are kind of an interesting mix of characters. So the first wife, I'm just going to make sure I've got them in the right order, one sec.
You sound, that must have been like the husband's problems, like, oh God, which one is which?
Well, very much so. Mm. So yeah, the wives are all, they're very different. So Rachel is the first wife. She was born into the Mormon faith. She was Blake's first wife, obviously, like I said, and then they kind of decided together, or at least that's how it's presented, I think how Rachel has convinced herself it happened, to bring more women into the relationship. So Emily is the second wife. She's really interesting because she was raised as a very strict Catholic. An interesting switch around there.
The opposite, really.
Yeah. Emily's very, very young, quite immature, or at least she seems that way.
Okay.
And then Tina is the third wife. And Tina, I believe, I can't remember if she was either I think she was a sex worker in Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
As opposed to a stripper. And she was obviously, I think, you get the impression she was kind of looking for a home and someone to take care of her.
I see. So a vulnerable character.
Very much. I mean, they all are in different ways. And as you get further through the book, it becomes clear more and more so that that's the case.
Okay.
They aren't massively likable to begin with. Or maybe it's not that they're not likable, but I think, like I said, you can't really empathise with them because the way they come at things is just so completely different to anything, any way that I handle things in life, I guess. But actually, after they've killed their husband, and I'm saying that because that's how it describes it on the back, I'm not giving away anything about the outcome. But they sort of, they come into their own and find their own places within the family without him there. And it's, at the heart of it is kind of about their journeys into becoming themselves more so than the crime. You do get resolution on what happened. My big letdown with this book was, and it feels unfair to say that this was a letdown, it had a very, what I think is probably realistic ending for the characters.
Okay.
So this might be too much of a spoiler. I don't know. Sorry if it is. But you get to the end and you kind of just want everyone to be saved.
Right.
And go on and live these normal lives, right? And they don't. And I don't think it would have been realistic if they had. It's a happy ending for what it is. And I think it was probably the best possible ending that Kate Quinn could have written to fit in with the characters still. But, I didn't love it. Yeah. It kind of left me feeling, you know, the most bleak book that I've read in about 20 years, Chris Whitaker's We Begin at the End.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how when you finish reading that and you put it down and you're like, oh my God, I feel awful.
He has that effect on people.
Yeah. Much like after we finished our interview with him.
Exactly.
Very good episode, by the way. Everyone should go back and listen. Yeah, I kind of had a fraction of that feeling finishing it, which I didn't get at first because, like I said, on the surface, it's a perfectly happy ending. And I think it was that thing of you just wanted everyone to be saved, which maybe isn't fair because maybe they don't need to be saved.
Yeah,
who knows?
True.
That's above my pay grade. So definitely a good read. Kate Quinn is a fantastic storyteller and she sort of wove together these different locations throughout the book and they felt so realistic, even though it was places that I'd never been to, obviously.
Yeah. Sorry, to go back to what you were just saying about the wanting to be saved thing, that's really interesting because I wonder how much of that is just our institutionalization is probably a bit of a dramatic word for it. But when you're a kid and you watch all the Disney films and you watch all the cartoons and stuff, it's always about everyone getting saved, damsels in distress, whatever, happy endings. And I wonder how much of that is just so ingrained into us that anything outside of it just seems so bleak.
Oh, yeah, completely. That's entirely right. I'm pretty sure that I've had this moan on an episode before, actually, talking about a Law and Order episode.
Yes.
Yeah, where it finished and you don't find out who committed the crime. It's that thing, if you want everything wrapped up in a nice little bow, you want to know all the details.
Yeah. Your closure.
You want to know everyone's going to be okay, the bad guys aren't going to be okay.
Mm.
And no matter how much I can see that a lot of the time it's a better storytelling device not to wrap everything up with a pretty little bow, I still want it.
Yeah.
I'm a child of Disney, what can I say?
You are a Disney princess. I've always said that about you.
I'd just like to clarify, I'm not like a Disney adult.
Oh, God.
Can you
God
imagine if
not.
I was a Disney adult on top of a sad Harry Potter fan?
We wouldn't be doing this podcast.
I don't think I'd have any friends. The combination of the two would probably just...
You would have friends, but they'd be a very particular type of friend. And you'd be more of a gang, I would say, than
a cult, yeah.
Yeah, I think it would be called a mum's net of friends. You would have. So thankfully you don't, because we would not. I don't think I'd probably be doing this podcast with you, to be honest.
No, I think that's fair.
Thank you.
So yes, I do recommend the book. I think I'd give it 3 tombstones. It was a solid read. There was nothing wrong with it, but it was kind of just a solid read.
And did you learn a lot about polygamy within the book and within the religious context? Does it go into that a lot or?
A little bit. It does, but it was stuff that I kind of already had picked up from what I've read and seen over the years from TV shows and all that jazz. There was nothing groundbreaking. Actually, one thing that was really interesting, and it was that thing of, I don't know why, but anytime someone talks about food in books when they go into detail, that's kind of one of the things that always sticks in my mind. Maybe I'm just a massive pig, I don't know.
You like food?
Yeah, good. Love food. Mm. But it talks quite a lot about how one of the first wife's responsibilities was to can 3 years worth of food so they have it there in case of the rapture. But they went quite heavily into the process around that, and I thought it was really interesting.
To be fair, canning, that is interesting. I've never really thought about it. I know like preserves and stuff, but not canning.
Yeah, no, they canned like meat and veggies and other stuff, I'm sure. Probably fruit. Let's go wild.
Sure. She sounds like a very good wife.
Yeah, well, in some ways. Probably not in others.
Oh, well, I mean, there you go. I guess it depends on what she's canning.
Oh, my God, they should have canned his body. How amazing would that
parts.
Have been? Yeah.
Oh, that's dark.
Spoiler, they did not can his body.
Oh, they really missed all out on like a Dharma trick there.
I know. I'm sorry, I've got regrets now. Should I drop a tombstone? No, we'll stick with 3.
No, but I do feel like you should email, is it Kate Quinn, and say... Hey, a bit disappointed you didn't can the body.
Some feedback.
Here are my thoughts on how you could have successfully dissected the body for canning.
Yeah, I'll do some diagrams. Perfect.
Perfect. Yeah, I think that will go really well. So 3 tombstones, that's pretty solid.
Yeah, decent read, would recommend. Didn't set me on fire.
No, that's fair. But the thing is, not every book is going to set you on fire, is it?
Well, no. Nature of the Beast is. If it did, then even the book would be disappointing.
Yeah, yes, constantly burning.
Yeah. Who has the energy?
Not us, that's no. I'm sure.
No.
Not in this economy. Although, actually, it'd be quite useful during the fact we're in an energy crisis. It would keep us warm in the winter.
Yeah. It's one crisis after another, isn't it?
Yes, what a time to be alive.
Or actually, not even one crisis after another. It's many crises all at the same time.
Yeah, everything everywhere all at once, like the film, but really, really bleak and shit. So, cool. Well, I'm glad we've gone down this road. I'm glad that we've started that conversation. Why don't I change the subject with my book?
Yeah.
Which, spoiler, is no less bleak. So my book I'd actually got for my birthday in July. It had been on my Amazon wish list. You do this thing where whenever I see a book that interests me, I just whack it on my Amazon wish list so I don't forget it.
Yeah, my wish list is out of control.
Yeah, same. And then I inevitably, my family will end up giving me a stack of books. Although reluctantly, I have to say, my mum's always like, I don't like to buy you books. I was like, why not? I like them. That's why they're on my wish list. Why would you not want to encourage that in a person?
What was her answer?
She was just like, it's a present. I was like, books are the best present. I don't understand.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with a book.
No, completely. Anyway, she's insane. So the book that I read was called Her Perfect Twin by Sarah Bonner.
Ooh.
Mm.
I love a twin story. Twins are fascinating.
They really are. And you know what? They seem to be having a bit of a moment, actually. There seem to be quite a few crime books around I've seen that are related to twins. Because it, as you say, I guess it's naturally intriguing, isn't it? If you're not one. So I will read you the blurb. When Megan discovers photographs of her estranged identical twin sister on her husband's phone, she wants answers, understandably. Leah already has everything Megan has ever wanted. Fame, fortune, freedom to do whatever she wants. And when Megan confronts Leah, an argument turns to murder. The only way she can get away with killing her twin is to become her. But then lockdown hits. How can Megan continue living two lives? And what happens if someone else knows her secret too?
I always find it very jarring when COVID and lockdown and stuff are in works, like literature or TV shows.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It feels very odd.
I know. I didn't. And you know what? I knew it was coming, and it's. I still found it jarring, even though it was very clear in the blurb that it was going to happen.
I feel like we haven't emotionally recovered from the last few years, and to have it thrown at you from another angle is quite upsetting.
No, and I think also one of the reasons for that is that I don't want to think about it ever again.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't fun.
No.
I mean, put aside the stress of leading a double life, it's just quite awful for everybody, really.
I cannot believe that anyone during lockdown had the energy to live a double life. That was a dark, sad time.
Well, yeah, the thing, the book, there's quite a few bits in the book where, I mean, I'm not going to spoil too much, but she's, you know, speaking to people on Zoom because it's during lockdown. And her colleagues are like, oh, imagine if you had a second family. Oh, what stress and all this. And it's, I wonder how many people did actually have that problem during lockdown, thinking about it.
That's interesting. I'd never thought about it, but there must have been.
Yeah. Mm. How many people like locked in basements and sheds somewhere would like to starve to death because they weren't allowed to leave the house to feed them?
I don't know statistically the number of kidnapped victims that are kind of kept captive and not immediately killed or used for other purposes or whatever.
Sure, or trafficked or something.
Yeah, but there must be some out there.
Oh, for sure.
And I would be very interested to know what happened. I'm sure the police would be very interested to know what happened as well to them over lockdown. There must have been an impact, right?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't think there's been like a survey done on that by YouGov. We should probably try and commission one. How did you keep your captive during lockdown? How was it sustainable? So many questions. You're right. I would love to know the answer too. Sadly, I think it's another one of life's great mysteries that we're never going to get the answer to for that one.
But it's just one issue after another, isn't it?
I know. So a continual disappointment. If anyone's listening who has held someone captive and they did it over lockdown, if you could send us an email, I promise, right? I promise I won't tell the police on you. I won't dob you in. So if you could just give us a brief outline of how that went and what you did, your secret will be safe.
Yeah.
And you'll just, you know what, get it off your chest. I bet you want to tell someone. Probably dying to tell someone.
I'd love that, please.
Yeah, I really would. But yeah, fingers crossed. So we'll see. I'll keep an eye on my email, on the emails for the podcast.
Okay,
readingbabypodcast@gmail.com if you want to unburden yourself and enlighten Sarah and I in the process. We'd really appreciate it.
We just want to learn.
Just like about the polygamy. We just want to learn.
We're scholars at heart.
The quest for knowledge never dies, you know?
Unlike their kidnapping victims, I would
potentially
imagine.
Well, we don't know, they might have had a system, but anyway, we'll find out. But I should probably talk about the book. So yeah, basically it spoils the very beginning in the blurb, so I can talk about the fact that it opens with her looking at her husband's phone, and there's a photo of her or someone that looks a hell of a lot like her, turns out that is in fact the case, wearing this like electric blue set of underwear lying on a bed.
Distinctive. She'd remember she had a pair of electric blue knickers.
Exactly, right? So instantly she's like, oh God, is this me? I don't think I own this underwear. So she starts like looking around in her drawers, and her husband is like, oh, your memory. Well, she doesn't basically say anything about the picture, but she's obviously like, something's going on here. She can't find the underwear. And so she has this very complicated relationship with her sister, Leah. So it's Megan and Leah are the twins. So they had a very complicated family history as kids, where her father led a double life and had another family.
Oh, layer upon layer.
It's in the water around these parts, apparently. But then the twins were going to write a book about it together, and Megan did most of the groundwork for it. And because she had a very clear direction she wanted to go in, she didn't want to cover a lot of the really awful stuff that happened. But Leah, her sister, went and just did it and told everything, told all the awful stuff, even though it broke their mother's heart and, you know, made her really unhappy and everything. So they fell out, they didn't talk for years. But with the releasing of this book, Leah, the twin, got really successful, really popular. She's basically become like an Instagram celebrity in the process.
Oh, I bet there's some bad feelings between them.
Yeah. And she's really rich and really successful. Whereas Megan, she works for an accountancy firm doing like training courses and things for businesses. And she and her husband, Chris, live in, you know, the best part of the book for me, this is very sad, second time in a row actually that I've mentioned this making me happy in a book, but it's set in Guildford. Because she was describing them driving past the Burger King at the industrial estate. I was like, oh, well, that's Lady Mead. I know that area.
It is Lady Mead. Oh, I know. Fun fact. My mother doesn't listen to this podcast, I don't think. Lady Mead is probably her favourite location in the entire world.
Really?
She's absolutely obsessed with the Next there.
It's a very big Next, yeah. Big Next, got a home.
It's not the biggest I've ever seen, though.
All right. Coming after Lady Mead, a bit harsh. But anyway,
back to your book.
Yeah, sorry. So yeah, that made me really happy. But yeah, she lives in a house in Guildford, and she's a bit bitter about it. So she goes and confronts her sister, and her sister basically knows that she's going to come and confront her. It seems like it's all kind of been planned that way. And she rocks up to have a go at her, and the sister's like, oh, you know, I met him at a hotel. I swear I didn't know who he was before, but, you know, he's in love with me. What are you going to do? So what Megan decides to do is smack her across the head with a wine bottle and kill her. Which, though, she didn't mean to kill her, but I don't think she was thinking about not killing her either, if that makes sense.
I mean, we've all been in that situation.
Yeah. Oh, God, if I had a pound for every time.
Every time I've not thought about killing someone.
Yeah, I mean, whichever way the river goes, I don't know what that means, but yeah, completely. So she then hides, they're in some cabin somewhere. I think the sister basically owns multiple properties, and she hides the sister's body in a freezer, a big chest freezer that happens to be there, quite useful, actually. And she decides that the best way, as the blurb says, is to hide the fact that her sister is dead, is to be both of them. And so she, because she looks like her, handy, they are identical twins, she like is able to use facial recognition on her phone and things, and, you know, work out a lot of stuff. So she starts doing that. And in the meantime, while doing that, she also stumbles on an online dating profile for this guy that her sister was speaking to called Tom. And she goes on a date with him. And because basically it's also revealed, so obviously her husband has been cheating, quite clear from the beginning.
Yeah.
And they have a bit of a troubled marriage, a bit of a difficult relationship. He's very abusive. It's like quite early on. And you kind of get the sense from the beginning, I don't want to spoil too much, a bit of gaslighting going on.
Okay.
Kind of trying to drive her insane. Like, so for example, with the electric blue underwear that finds in the picture, he has bought items of that color and put them around the house to kind of mess with her.
I'm not sure I should be amused by that, should I?
No, it's quite awful, but it's an interesting detail anyway.
Yeah.
So then, yeah, she starts going on dates with this guy, Tom, and she falls in love with him, and he falls in love with her, but he thinks that she's Leah, and she's just like, you know what, actually, I'll just be Leah, because Leah's life's way better than mine. She's really rich. This guy's really hot. My husband's a dick. So I think I'll run off with him. Then lockdown hits. Bad timing, really. And there are loads of other kind of twists and turns that follow it from there. I don't want to spoil too much. But overall, I did enjoy it. The only parts for me that made it, and I'm going to give it, I'll say now, I gave it a 3 as well, 3 tombstone rating. The reason why it doesn't get more of a tombstone rating for me is that the characters are very black and white. Okay. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
There's no kind of, we've talked about it quite a lot. A person isn't all bad or all good, right, in life. I mean, there are some, sure. But for the most part, people are a multitude of things. In this, there are bad guys and there are good people. And it's a bit kind of, especially the... I mean, it's established quite early on that her husband is a dick. And he's a real dick. And there is no kind of redeeming aspect to him whatsoever. And I just found that a little bit like, ugh, a bit too evil, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
At certain points, he could have had a handlebar moustache and been tying her to a train track and it would have worked. You know, so I just kind of think I like personally a bit of more subtlety in the characterization. It's told from multiple perspectives within the book. So I guess there is something in the fact that he's revealing his inner thoughts and things like that. So you would get a very honest account. But I don't know, the characters weren't especially likable for the most part. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed being in Guildford, you know, going to Lady Mead, at least driving past it. And there are other kind of the things that she had, you know, thinking about her running away, how she was kind of planting the seeds and planning for that was quite interesting. So I did enjoy it. But yeah, I was, again, a bit like you, wasn't blown away by it. And I think it was unfortunate, some of the characterization that did that for me. But a fun little ride. And also the lockdown thing. I'm not ready to go back into lockdown, even fictionally speaking.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. This is hilarious because the plot of this book really reminds me of... Did you ever read any of the Sweet Valley High books as a like teenager?
No, I didn't.
I used to read the Sweet Valley High books, and they did these every so often. They do like thriller editions,
right?
And there was one. I think it was an arc of like four books, and obviously Sweet Valley High was about two twins, Elizabeth and Jessica, and it was this random psychopath who realised that she was also identical to them.
What?
Her name was Margot. I can't believe I remember all this.
Margot.
So she like stalked them down to where they lived, and she fell in love with Elizabeth's boyfriend. She replaced Elizabeth.
Oh, shit.
And I mean, it all got resolved in the end, but then they did another book, and it turned out Margot had a long-lost identical twin sister called Nora.
What?
To get revenge on Margot.
So they're like, they're quadruplets.
Yeah, absolutely amazing, honestly.
What was the writer taking at that point in their life?
No idea. I'm pretty sure that they were all ghostwritten at that point as well.
Brilliant.
So I suspect they could write what they wanted without actually having their name against it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I like that. Oh, that's fun. Doing this, that's clearly like somebody's gone a bit unhinged or watched too many soap operas.
Oh, yeah. They were an amazing series.
Wow.
Three or four books. It all like culminated on prom night or something like that, which, you know, it doesn't get better than that.
I need to know how it ends.
I am going to try and look them up because that's really entertained me. They were really good. So I'll
let
you know.
Can you remember how it ends?
No.
Oh.
I remember, I think Margot maybe went through a massive glass window and I think died.
Classic. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. I mean, it was a happy ending for Jessica and Elizabeth, obviously.
Sure.
I feel like maybe one of the OGs went to prison briefly as well because they thought that she'd like killed her twin sister. I have to find them.
You have to find them. And you have to come next time we record, you have to tell me the ending.
Okay, so on that topic, next month's theme, Frankie, let us know. Obviously, you're the only one who'll be covering this because I will be rereading Sweet Valley High.
Yeah, I'm going to have to read two books then and do a Sarah impression at the same time. So the theme of our next episode is going to be historical true crime. And by that, we mean any book or crime published before 1950.
Yeah. So the book can be more modern if we want it to be, but it has to be about a crime from the 50s or earlier.
Yeah, pre-50s.
Or it can just be a really old book.
A very atone.
Yeah.
But yeah, we haven't done a true crime one for a while. So
no, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too. I think it'll be good. But if you listening have any ideas for themes, because we are running out already, please do let us know what you think we should do. We're at Red and Berry Podcast on all the social media channels, or you can email us at redandberrypodcast@gmail.com. along with the person that's going to tell us how they kept someone captive during lockdown. If you could put that in the subject line, that would really help it pop.
Please. Thank you in advance. Thank you. Also, let us know if you've got any requests for author interviews. We can't guarantee that we can get them, but we're happy to try and cyberbully them into it.
It's worked so far, so absolutely. And we've got some really good ones coming up as well. We are actually very busy for author interviews, which is really nice.
All I do is read. Honestly.
Yeah. All I do is read and edit a podcast.
Shh.
Yeah. So it's about the same. It's about the same. It's fine. But yeah, please do let us know. And also, if anybody is going to Capital Crime at the end of September, please do let me know because I'm going to be there.
Frankie's there.
I'm
ready
there
to make friends.
Come and talk to me because I'll probably be alone.
Yeah.
I do know some people. I'm not that sad. I'm quite sad. But yeah, so if you're at Capital Crime and you see me, please do come and say hello. Or if there's any authors that you know are going to Capital Crime that you want me to try and get on the podcast, let me know and I'll start laying the groundwork. That doesn't sound creepy, does it? It doesn't sound like I'm stalking them.
Well, in an endearing way.
Yes.
So I think it's all right.
Not like Nora, the twin.
No,
stalking.
Nora, Margot. I think Jessica probably got involved because she was a bit psychotic anyway.
Was she the more psychotic of the two?
Oh, absolutely. Also, obviously, the one who was way more into boys and makeup.
Yeah. I don't know why I was still talking about this. I didn't read the books, but I did see some of the TV series when I was younger. Mm. And I remember there was like the good bookish one and then like the bad one, the bad
Absolutely.
Girl.
Absolutely. Mm. I actually rewatched some of them a couple of months ago. It was when I had COVID, actually. I mean, it's terrible, really terrible, but yes, in a kind of nostalgic way.
Yeah.
I don't think if someone came to it fresh today, they'd go, oh, yeah, this is great.
Well, this current show I'm watching, this is excellent.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Well, there you go. Thanks for listening, everyone. What a roller coaster of themes we've covered today.
Yeah, I'm sorry there was so much Sweet Valley High talk.
I'm sorry there was so much kidnap chat as well. But there you go. You never know where these ones are going to go.
A weird insight into our brains.
Yeah, this is why we need authors on these recordings so that they keep us slightly less unhinged.
Yeah.
Slightly on our best behaviour when there are other people on the call.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Well, on that note, thanks for listening, everyone.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello everyone, this is Tony Black, co-host and producer of You Have Been Watching, a podcast all about British sitcoms. Myself and co-host Robert Turnbull take you on a range of Britcom subjects and shows in our discussions, including greats such as Fawlty Towers.
Basil, in the same way as David Brent and Alan Partridge and Victor Meldrew, Basil works best when he is actually dealing with assholes.
Lesser known curios such as 15 Stories High.
There are all these kind of like gag setups being put in place in that episode. And then the sort of the end like minute or so is basically the payoff to all of these gags. And it's very, very sitcom-y.
And even top tens such as sitcom theme tunes. If we have to put composers of theme tunes in context for British sitcoms, I think Ronnie Hazelhurst, he's possibly the John Williams of
I was just gonna say he is the John Williams of
he is
British sitcom.
We're available on all podcast platforms and on social media at YHB Watching Pod on Twitter and Facebook, so please subscribe, get in touch, and come and have a laugh with us.